The last case set for oral argument this morning is Estate of Rose Beadle, appearing for appellant Truman Ragusa, Pamela Ryder, and Ron Parsons. Mr. Parsons will be arguing for 8 minutes on opening. And then Chris Knipe is present representing appellant Travis Ragusa, and you'll be arguing for 7 minutes, Mr. Knipe, on an initial argument. And then Gordon Nielsen is appearing on behalf of Appley, Alan Reese. And then Mr. Parsons will have a 5 minute rebuttal. You may proceed, Mr. Parsons. Oh, Mr. Knipe's going first. Okay.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Court and Counsel. This case involves the estate of Rose Beadle. During her lifetime, Rose established certain investment accounts with Edward Jones and designated beneficiaries on those accounts who are Truman Ragusa and Travis Ragusa, who she considered as grandsons. Later in her life, there was a conservator appointed, and as the court is well aware, there was proceedings involving that conservatorship which attempted to transfer those accounts to the conservatorship and to eliminate the designations as Travis and Truman Ragusa. I don't think that there's any dispute that the correct procedure was not followed in those conservator proceedings to transfer these accounts. South Dakota law provides very strict restrictions and conditions that have to be followed in order to transfer those beneficiary designated accounts, and that obviously was not done in this case. There was an order signed, there was no hearing, there were no findings as required by statute, there was no notice given to any of the people involved in the case or as required by statute. And so there was certainly a deprivation of not only statutory procedure but due process in changing those accounts. SDCL 29A-5-420 provides that if the notice is not provided to those interested parties, no order may be entered in order to do so. And because there was no effective order, those accounts should have remained as designated to Travis Ragusa and Truman Ragusa. Rose Beadle passed away on February 8th, 2020. At that time, it's our position that because there was no effective order, that those assets vested in Truman Ragusa and Travis Ragusa by operation of law. And I think that that statute is very unique when it says that no order may be entered.
So what's the relief on, if you win, what does it look like on remand for as far as you're concerned, Mr. Knipe?
I believe that the effective relief is to vest those accounts in Truman and Travis Ragusa.
So did there's you file for summary judgment below?
We did not file for summary judgment, Your Honor. We opposed summary judgment, but if the issue on appeal is the ownership of those accounts, I realize that it's whether the trial court erred in granting summary judgment, but it can be remanded for further hearing, but certainly I don't think there's any dispute that the statutes were not followed, no order could be entered from that proceeding, and so it should be vested in those beneficiaries.
But even if you're right, that may not resolve, or does it, the ultimate question concerning authority or ownership or who owns that money. Wouldn't that have to be litigated?
I have no objection to having a hearing on all of those issues, Judge. I think if you relate back to that 5-420, I don't have any objection to having a hearing to establish all of those factors or to have the court consider all of those factors.
Isn't that really what you're arguing has to happen, that there has to be some sort of substantive determination? I mean, you're basically arguing you were kicked out on procedural grounds.
Well,
and improperly, and that these actions were taken without any kind of a hearing. I mean, isn't that really what you're asking for? Is give me a hearing and let me address these issues on the merits?
Well, we would welcome that, Judge. I don't have any objection to that.
So I want to confirm the nature of what the acknowledgement that you made there. Is it you're agreeing to a hearing on the 420 considerations or a hearing on the ownership of those assets? Because as I read the record, I think there may be an outstanding claim that Travis didn't have, Travis acted outside his authority as power of attorney in changing those in the original.
There is an assertion of undue influence. I think that perhaps is really the issue on remand, because I don't think that there's any dispute that the statute was not complied with in time.
But you agree that that it can be resolved by the probate court and should be resolved by the probate court?
Yes, Your Honor. I do want to address in my time certain jurisdictional questions, because there's a timeline of events that contributed to these situations. As the court knows, there was this hearing that nobody had notice of, nobody participated in, no findings were made. After that, Rose Beadle passed away on February 8th, 2020. SDCL 29A-5-507 provides that a conservatorship ends when that person passes away. And that's the basis for a claim that at that date, those assets vested in the beneficiaries that she had designated when she's alive. After that time, there was an accounting in the conservatorship. There was a petition to terminate the conservatorship. That happened several months later. I don't feel that the order terminating the conservatorship has any bearing on this for two reasons. One is that the law provides that the conservatorship terminates when the person passes away. The other is that the conservatorship order that says that the conservatorship terminated says specifically it terminated on the date of her death. It doesn't say it terminates now. It specifically referred to that the conservatorship terminated as of the date of her death. We did appeal in the conservatorship actions. I also want to address the timeline of that, because those last two orders, the expiration for time for appeal was on November 22nd, 2020. Prior to that time, in the estate proceedings, because the personal representative, the conservator, had always argued this should be determined by the probate court. Prior to that time, the personal representative filed a petition to determine title of those assets. On November 2nd, 2020, there was a petition filed in the estate proceeding before the time for appeal expired in the conservatorship proceeding by the personal representative to determine title of those assets.
Mr. Knipe, your portion of your time is expired. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Parsons.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court and my friends at counsel's table. My name is Ron Parsons, and Pamela Ryder and I are privileged to represent Truman Ragus in this proceeding. I kind of want to go to the question of what should happen after this. We are requesting this court reverse, and we think there are questions of law that this court should find on appeal that the probate court should have found as a matter of law down below. And the first is that the statute was not followed. It was violated six ways until Sunday. Nothing required by the statute occurred. There was not even a hearing.
You're talking about 420?
420. This court should hold as a matter of law, and I think there's no dispute, 420 was violated in about every way you can imagine.
Counsel, was that part of the summary judgment pleadings, though, that we are currently reviewing as set for? Because it wasn't your summary judgment. Did that come in your response to the summary judgment?
Yes, absolutely.
And then the other issue we have here is it's just not really clear with what the circuit court's basis for for granting summary judgment with the one-line ruling saying there's no question of fact. But when you read the transcript, it seemed to be all about how the court was interpreting this court's prior dismissal of the other appeals. So if it isn't clear whether or not the circuit court ruled on the basis that you're advocating now for us to make a determination of a matter of law, does that matter? Can we still make that determination if the circuit court hasn't and if it's fact-based?
I think you do, because I think it's what's clear from both the order and the court's statements and its questions, or the court's questions really, is that it viewed it could not do anything. It couldn't disturb what has already happened. I think that was its view. And so there's a fully developed record in two appeals now on what happened when these deletions were accomplished by a stranger, by someone who Rose Beadle never met and had no connection to, without following any of the procedures. All that's been briefed and all the evidence is in the record. We've got a record this thick, as the court knows, about what happened in the guardianship and conservatorship proceeding. This court, we believe, should find as a matter of law, 420 has to be followed, and it wasn't. It wasn't even attempted to be followed. It wasn't even cited. This court should hold that, as the probate court should have, and we asked it to. What is the effect of that? I think that's also a question of law. The effect of that is that that order was void, ab initio. It was ultra vires. It had no effect. It was prohibited. It was unlawful, in fact. It violated South Dakota law to enter it. And so, therefore, it had no effect. What should happen? It should not be recognized. And there is express statutory jurisdiction under the probate code that both parties have cited. They cited it first, the personal representative, and then as soon as this court dismissed the other appeal, they withdrew it. So we filed our petition under Section 3-105, which expressly authorizes and requires a probate court to determine title to disputed assets in the estate. And how do you determine title? Well, you look at what is the legal right. And because that order was invalid and, in fact, unlawful, there was no legal right, for it has no legal effect. If it had no legal effect, then those TOD designations that Rose Beadle decided to give to who she considered to be her grandsons, she had no kids, she had no husband, she had no family.
So the estate filed a motion for summary judgment.
Yes.
You opposed it with that argument.
That's right.
But you didn't file a motion for summary judgment.
Correct.
Now, if I accept the argument that we can resolve that particular claim on summary judgment, it appears to me when I look at the record that there may be other claims that the probate court ought to be resolving. So we can't just say, Travis and Truman, get this account. At best, we can say the 420 hearing was not done appropriately, and there's enough information in the record for us to be able to resolve that, because it's undisputed that it was not done properly. But then we still have to let the probate court do its job and resolve other issues regarding the ownership of this account. Do you agree?
I'm nodding. I agree with everything you just said, Justice Byron. This court can hold we never go back to 420. That's a conservatorship statute. No one can stay back and try to do that again. But what we can say was never validly done. So this court can hold that as a matter of law, and I think should. Here's the result. The TOD designations are still in place as far as that is concerned. But the personal representative has raised an undue influence claim, saying maybe she was influenced to do those TOD designations. That's what the trial should have been about. And that's why we didn't make a motion for summary judgment, because that is a question of fact. And we have got the witnesses lined up to demonstrate.
Or maybe how about the authority question under the power of attorney? Can that be litigated there as well?
Well, it's not been raised. I guess they could try to amend the petition at that point, but that's not an argument that I believe has been raised. They raised an undue influence claim. And we've got everyone lined up, her attorneys who did that, the Edward Jones investment advisor, who said that's what she wanted to do. She was of sound mind. I have no question that she was at that time. Everyone is lined up to testify to that, and we just want to be able to put on the evidence to show that. That's the argument they're making. They'll have the burden on that, and we're ready to meet it at a trial. So that is what we're asking exactly, precisely, Justice Byron, is that these legal issues, there's no question this was done incorrectly, violated the statute. I think inarguable. There's no fact question on that. There's no fact question in our view that those TOD designations were unlawfully deleted by a stranger, by someone who, Rose Beadle doesn't know who that is. He was apparently an accountant for the nursing home that she was working at. He has no right to mess with her estate plan without following the law, at least. And that's what this case is about. She chose to give these assets, we believe the evidence will prove overwhelmingly, to the only two people in her life that spent time with her, who she considered her grandsons. They were the grandsons of her longtime partner.
I'd like to talk to you just a little bit about a very unique procedure that was used in this in the guardianship case,
yeah,
with the statement of the proceedings.
Yeah.
So, fortunately, before Judge Flemmer died, you had filed a motion with Judge Flemmer asking him to do a statement of the proceedings,
yeah,
which, as I can review from the record, it appears the parties had the opportunity to litigate over the nature of the proceedings that occurred in the guardianship proceeding, and then Judge Flemmer made his statement of the proceedings, and those seem to be very precise, and in fact say, we never held a hearing.
Yeah.
Notice was never provided. So I'm curious about your interpretation of the effect of that statement of proceedings.
Yes, I do a little bit of appellate law, and I never had that come up before. And the reason it came up is because no one got notice of anything. This was all closed, and no one made any appearance, our clients, nobody, until after Rose Beadle had died, the conservatorship had terminated, the assets were already in the probate. So when we filed a notice of appearance after everything was already gone to try to preserve our record, our arguments. And so there is no record, so we agreed, I think both sides agreed, we need to have something for this court to look at. And so we both got the opportunity to go before Judge Flemmer, who gave a very, all the credit in the world to Judge Flemmer. The court was very forthright about what hadn't happened. You're exactly right.
So, but the question is the effect of that on us, is that the same as essentially Judge Flemmer having made findings of fact that have been unchallenged and that we should accept about what happened in the proceedings below with respect to notice and hearings?
Yeah, I don't know, but you do have the court putting its stamp of approval stating that, yeah, this, we never followed any of these procedures.
After an opportunity for the parties to litigate what happened in those proceedings.
That's
and
true.
Then presumably an opportunity to appeal
to secret
the accuracy of the statement of proceedings made by the circuit court judge.
I think that's true.
And that didn't happen.
Well, we filed an appeal.
But not in the guard. Well, that's true.
That's true. We appealed and made all these arguments before.
Issue. You weren't challenging the statement of proceedings.
No, in fact, I think we helped draft
for
the judge to review and consider, and I think he made some changes to it, though. He reviewed it very closely.
Your time's up, Mr. Parsons. Thank you. Mr. Nielsen, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gordon Nielsen. I'm an attorney from Sisseton, and I represent the estate of Rose Beadle, specifically Alan Reese in his capacity as the personal representative of Rose's estate. Previously, I represented Todd Gary, who was an accountant, and Alan Reese when they were serving as guardians and conservators for Rose Beadle. One of the things I think that we need to point out in counsel indicated that Truman and Travis Ragus were like grandchildren to Rose Beadle. And it's a big part of the record, and we have to remember that Travis Ragus was indicted for stealing over $172,000 from Rose Beadle. He's got an order of restitution at this point, and it's ongoing. He's making payments of that $172,000. Hank Prim, who works for the DCI, in his report that's part of the record,
so
indicated
that
there was 27 different theft transactions or transactions that appeared to be theft that related to both Travis and Truman Ragus.
The change in the guardianship or the change in the beneficiaries took place when the court issued an order based on the estate's request for a 420 hearing, correct?
I don't believe that's correct.
Explain how did the court come to enter an order authorizing the estate or authorizing the guardian or conservator to make the change in the beneficiaries?
Yes, Justice Byron. I think it's important to start off in knowing the duty of a conservator. Under 29A5405, a conservator shall act to protect the person's best interest and exercise reasonable care, diligence, and prudence.
The motion wasn't a 420 motion?
No, it was a 419 motion, Your Honor. And as this court is aware, Section 419, keep in mind when Todd Gary was appointed as guardian and conservator in this matter, the fox was in the hen house. Money was being taken. Travis Ragus, who had previously been acting as Rose's power of attorney, had been indicted. It was the manager of the assisted living center that called the Roberts County State's attorney and said, we need a fiduciary for this gal.
If that's accurate, and I don't know that there's been findings about any of it at this point, how does that exempt people who feel compelled to act, to intervene, how does that exempt them from notice provisions that exist under our law? There's no emergency exception or theft exception or embezzlement exception. It seems like you could do everything that you want to do to help somebody, but there are these notice requirements. So what about those?
Your Honor, the legislature has provided us with Section 29A5-419. And of course, we know that 29A5-419 comes directly in front of 520, or 420, right? And 29A5-419 says, nothing in this chapter prohibits a conservator from seeking court authorization for any action, proposed actions, or omissions. Todd Gary, knowing what he knew, knowing that Travis Ragus has been indicted, went in front of Judge Flemmer and said, Judge Flemmer, Travis, this is paraphrasing, asked for a court order to terminate the TOD accounts. I don't know how a person would interpret 29A5-419 that says nothing in this chapter prohibits the court from acting.
Well,
and
but
did?
So that refers to prohibits the court from giving him permission to do something, but what in that statute relates to the procedure by how you ask permission for the court to do something?
I can only tell you what the statute says.
So it doesn't say anything about that. It just says you can ask for something else that isn't already in this chapter. You can ask the court's permission, but it's really not a statute that pertains to procedure.
Yeah, and I can only tell you what the legislature has provided in that particular statute, and that
so we read that in isolation? We wouldn't read that in conjunction with other statutes that may bear upon the request for relief. So for instance, if there's a specific request for relief to change a TOD arrangement, and that implicates other particular rules, we wouldn't pay attention to that. We would read this statute in isolation?
It says nothing in this chapter, so I would say yes. And I want to point this out.
It says nothing in this chapter will prevent them from seeking it. It doesn't exempt them from compliance with other statutory provisions.
Your Honor, the court has had an opportunity to interpret that statute recently in the Adam case. And in the Adam case, it says, relevant to the question at issue, we note that the Act provides a conservator with broad authority to act and the circuit court with wide discretion in ensuring that a conservator is properly managing the protected person's financial affairs. I think that the circuit court had broad authority. But I do want to point out, I think, which is a big issue here. This was a order that Judge Flemmer issued in a conservatorship file. I'm not here today on the conservatorship file. I'm here on a probate file. In the conservatorship file, Judge Flemmer issued an order. Do they like the order? Probably not. Did they appeal that order in the conservatorship file? They did. And what did this court do? They dismissed it as moot.
Do you perceive that as a determination that we actually made a decision on the merits, whether something was good or bad or appropriate or right or wrong?
I just know that the court dismissed the appeal. And so that means, in my opinion, that it's a final order. It's either a final order or it's not.
So you understand mootness is a component of justiciability. If a court feels as though it can't grant effectual relief or it doesn't have a live controversy in front of it, it can disregard and overlook jurisdiction that otherwise exists in favor of saying, you know, we don't have a live controversy, we can't really give relief here. So from that principle, how is it that you glean a substantive ruling that would have preclusive effect somewhere else down the road?
So in the guardianship appeal, which was dismissed as being moot, this court could have remanded that matter back for further proceedings.
But if we don't have a live controversy, or we don't have a situation where we can grant effectual relief, how could we remand? Because to remand would require us to, at a minimum, assert jurisdiction in order to grant some sort of relief that justifies the remand.
In the guardianship file, there was an order to show cause that was issued to counsel that asked, the Supreme Court asked counsel, do we have jurisdiction? One, and is this matter moot? The final determination, and I'm telling you, it's your decision, was that it was moot. There was no issue as far as jurisdiction. If the court wanted to, under 29A5-501, they could have remanded it back for further determination in the guardianship file. It says a termination of an appointment does not affect the liability of a guardian or conservator.
Is that what you argued to us at the time? That we could remand it back, or did you argue, when you addressed mootness in the briefs that you submitted to court, what was the argument that you presented? Do you recall?
Yes, I do. I argued that ownership of the asset would be best left for the probate court.
And then when you got to the probate court, what did you tell the probate court?
I said that this matter was final. There was a final order. Judge Flemmers, there's two final orders. There was the October 23rd, 2019 order that allowed for the termination of the TOD. And there was also the June 16th, 2020 order, which approved the final accounting. Both of those were appealed and both of them were dismissed by this court as moot. And as this court knows, under 29A5-408, once an accounting has been approved, subject to appeal, it becomes final. So let's fast forward to the
motion. So you didn't think it was moot when you asked and mentioned to us that an option would be to litigate ownership in the probate?
I think there would be an option to litigate it in the probate, and I think there'd be an option to do it in the guardianship case under 29A5-501.
But you agree at this point that there's never been a determination of title of the investment accounts, and they've never really had an opportunity for appellate review upon that determination.
Justice Kern, I will tell you this, that at the time of the summary judgment hearing on July 15th, 2022, there was no question of material fact presented to Judge Magiera. Judge Magiera was presented with Judge Flemmer's October 23, 2019 order that said the TOD account should be terminated.
But the argument that you made to him was not now decided on the merits. The argument that you made to him was you can't touch this because the Supreme Court has already decided it.
I said it was a question of law because there was a final order that was appealed and then the appeal was dismissed.
Travis and Truman didn't have the opportunity to raise the claims that they're raising now before Judge Flemmer. So you certainly can't be suggesting that those issues were resolved by his order, are you?
I did present to this court a case that comes out of Montana. It's the guardianship and conservatorship of Anderson, 2009 Montana 344 case, and that's exactly what the Supreme Court in Montana said. Travis and Truman Raguse did not have a property interest until she died. And as the court is aware, in 29A6306, TOD account doesn't really come into effect until the date of her death. At the date of Rose Beadle's death, the TOD designation was not in effect.
If the 420 statute applies, do you agree there was no compliance?
I agree that the guardian and conservatorship in this case, or conservator in this case, did not follow 420. They went under 419. And like I indicated, in this particular case, there's some.
So if we get to that issue, tell me what you think the next steps are. 420, or the guardianship order was not accomplished through the procedures ordained by statute. Now what happens?
First of all, like I indicated before, there's been a ruling in the guardianship case, and that was a final order. That's my position. If the Supreme Court, if this court disagrees and they remand it back, I think there'll be a requirement of a factual determination as far as the proper ownership of those assets. We'd have to get into undue influence, the power of attorney's ability to make those transfers.
Mr. Parsons has suggested, though, that with respect to that guardianship order, we should make that decision here because it's a question of law, and everything we need to make that decision is available to us. So we should resolve that part. And then he's acknowledged that there are outstanding issues that are not resolved or capable of resolution by the court that we send back to the probate court to resolve, and that would be the undue influence claim. Your position?
My position is the order that's up on appeal today is the July 22nd, 2022 order of Judge Magiera. Judge Magiera determined that there was no question of fact and that those accounts were assets of the estate of Rose Beadle and should be dispersed pursuant to her will. I think he was 100% right.
But I'm asking you what to help me figure out what would happen if I were to reverse that or if this court were to reverse that. We said the circuit court was wrong and that this was a controversy that should have been resolved in probate court. Should we also decide this guardianship order issue here because we have everything we need, or should we remand that back to the circuit court?
I think that the court has the ability to make a determination on whether or not those prior guardianship orders were appropriate, whether Judge Felmer had the authority under 419 to act. And I think that this court, in the Adam case, said that he did. Broad discretion. Was an abuse of discretion in this particular case, knowing that, like I indicated before, the fox was in the hen house for him to make that order. Was that an abuse of discretion? That should be the issue. That's why they appealed this case the first time in the guardianship file. Was there a determination that was an abuse of discretion? The case was dismissed. That's a final order of the court. Judge Magiera couldn't overrule Judge Flemmer's October 23, 2019 order. A circuit court can't overrule the circuit court. That's my recollection of the hierarchy of things. I think this matter is done. I think Judge Magiera was proper, and I would ask the court to affirm his decision.
Thank you, Mr. Nielsen.
Thank you.
You may proceed with rebuttal, Mr. Parsons.
Thank you, Your Honor. My good friend, Mr. Nielsen, I believe misspoke in his discussion of Section 419. The record is absolutely clear that Section 419 was never mentioned, cited by either the parties or the court when these TOD deletions were done.
It was a 420 motion.
Wasn't even a 420 motion. That's our other point, Your Honor. 420 was never even cited or mentioned by either the parties or the court when these deletions were done. These deletions were done under the general authority of 411 that every conservator has that lists what you can do without court intervention. And then a petition was filed that mentioned no statutes, did not other than 411. I think the order might have mentioned 411. 419 never came up in the guardianship proceeding.
Would it authorize it, the actions that were taken here?
I don't think the court would get to that question because it was never invoked. Certainly it has to be used to do it. But I don't think the mere existence of 419 that was discovered and mentioned for the first time by Mr. Nielsen on appeal in his appellate brief. That's the first time 419 is ever cited in any of these cases, was the appeal in the first case. That its existence does not authorize the court or anyone to retroactively nullify the rest of the code and say, well, you know, you never really had to follow any of these statutes ever because 419 exists. was never cited, relied upon, raised, invoked, applied, but since it exists, none of the statutes matter. That would render the whole probate code a nullity.
And at the time that order was entered, wasn't he still acting under a temporary guardianship that
exactly.
is required, that has to relate to the specific authority that is granted by
exactly.
the court?
Precisely, Your Honor. That's why, and there was no hearing. There was never even a hearing. A hearing was scheduled and noticed for January of the following year, and October, 3 months earlier, somehow an order was presented to Judge Flemmer with no notice to anyone, and he signed it without a hearing, without findings, without anything, without evidence, and even the order itself applied the wrong standard. It applied the best interest standard, not what Rose Beadle wishes, which was what this is about. This is about what did Rose Beadle want to happen, not what did someone she never met, who was her nursing home's accountant, want to happen with her assets when she died. That's what this is about. And she made that very clear when she said in her TOD designations, I want these to go 50% to my friend, grandson, Truman.
What effect, I'm sorry if I could, Mr. Parsons, what effect, you've heard and read the argument concerning Mr. Nielsen's view of our prior dismissal, in your view, what effect, if any, does that have?
I don't think it does. We certainly thought the court could have remanded it. This court held that it was moot because it could no longer grant effectual relief. And I understand the rationale for that. The assets are no longer in the conservatorship. In fact, the conservatorship hasn't existed for years by that point. The assets are in the probate. And that's why we have Section 3-105 to determine title to assets in a probate that are disputed. That's why that was Mr. Nielsen's argument as to why this court should dismiss that case as moot. You should decide it there, not here.
Would you regard the dismissal as any kind of an intimation concerning the efficacy or correctness of one party's position or another?
No. In fact, and we cited cases in our brief that a mootness determination is not something that can be part of the link in the chain of a res judicata analysis at all. Mootness means it wasn't adjudicated. It's a non-adjudicata, not a res judicata, to coin a phrase. I did see something in the description of the case where it was suggested there wasn't an appeal from the final orders. On the record of 208, record page 208 of the guardianship proceedings, we have our notice of appeal, our amended notice of appeal that was filed before any notice of entry was ever filed, where we appealed from every single order, including the final order, out of an abundance of caution. So I don't think there's any question on those terms. But this is a close question about whether the court should have heard it in the first round. When I read the Nebraska cases cited by Mr. Nielsen, I thought, I wish I'd had those to provide this court with those the first time around. But since we're here in the second time around and we've never been able to get into any of these things, I don't think anything can be precluded now. But these are questions of law. How do these statutes apply? The facts aren't disputed other than, as we've acknowledged, whether there was some kind of undue influence. And they can use, I could tell you why there was a no contest pleading for Travis, and I can justify all that, and maybe that'll be part of the hearing. It was a no contest. There was no admission of guilt, but Truman didn't even know these things existed until this whole thing arose. He didn't even know she had Edward Jones accounts. He didn't know any of this. He didn't know he was listed until he found out long after who he considered his grandma Rose passed away. So please, let's give us a chance to prove our case, if there's a case to be made that there was some sort of undue influence here. But otherwise, we respectfully review that. I don't know how much time I have, but I remember.
You're about up. Why don't you wrap up?
Oh, well, I just wanted to say that the guardianship of Dean Nelson case, I lost that case in front of this court, and I was right to lose it because this court needs to enforce 420, I believe, as a matter of law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. The case is submitted. The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.